And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with hosts T. Ramon and Sco.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalists Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Good evening, everybody.
Welcome to the latest edition of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sco, featuring legendary sports writers Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance. My name is Ricky Hampton, and I'm doing a little pinch hitting for Tim before he gets in and joins us tonight. And I want to wish everybody a happy new year and bring in the one and only Mr. Roscoe Nance. What's going on tonight, Roscoe?
Hey, Ricky, I'm doing good. How about yourself? How was your holidays?
Man, it was fantastic, brother. My holiday was capped by a total butt-kicking of my Alabama Crimson Tide, man. I'm up here in Detroit, Big Ten land. I'm always talking stuff about the SEC. But the Tide got it put on there. And you know, Monday night, people are still talking about that today. The domination that Clemson showed. Were you surprised? I'm not surprised Clemson won, but in the fashion that they won. What are your thoughts about Monday night?
Well, I think I don't think too many people were overly surprised that Clemson won. I think that everybody knew that Clemson was capable of winning, but the margin of victory, and the way I look at it, the game was really closer than the score would indicate because, you know, Alabama turned the ball over on downs three times in the red zone.
Right.
That's 21 potential points. The pick six, that's another 7 points. Then another turnover that led to a touchdown. So it was just Alabama's. And add to that, Alabama's failure to execute on third downs and their inability to get a pass rush on Clemson's quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, and to make stops on third down. I mean, those were the keys. I think if they had run the ball a little bit more in some of those third down situations where they went for it on fourth down. So to me, those were the keys. I mean, not to take anything away from Clemson in that performance, but this was just some curious calls, some curious plays by Alabama, especially the fake field goal attempt.
Oh my God!
You know, the call itself and the play call. You know, that was real head scratchers both. You know, to run the holder off tackle 6 yards to go. I mean, that's a lot. So if you know that you're going to go for it on fourth down, and you have third and six, and the way they had run the ball, they were averaging about at least 4 yards per carry. You know, run the ball and come back on fourth down. You'd likely to have fourth and one, fourth and two, or whatever, which is much more makeable than fourth and six.
I think you're exactly right there, Roscoe. And I was thinking along those lines, too. Because you think about it, Alabama ran the ball effectively throughout the ball game. And they moved the ball. And again, like you said, they could not score inside the red zone. They turned it over on downs three times, had a pick six. But, you know, you got to give Clemson props. But you know what else I thought about that game, Roscoe? And I know it probably has gone through your mind as we watch these two teams battle in recent years. The DNA of that game lies in black college football. I mean, that was Jackson State, Alabama A&M, Florida A&M, Tennessee State. The DNA of that game lies within black college football because that game, those players aren't on the field if this game takes place 40 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's really ironic that it shakes out that way because a lot of those Clemson guys, you know, at that time would have been at South Carolina State.
South Carolina State,
yeah.
They'd have been at South Carolina State. The Alabama guys would have been at A&M or Alabama State.
Yeah.
Or down at Jackson State, maybe Tennessee State.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell you, man, as someone who grew up with black college football, and I certainly understand the importance of segregation, but in many ways, we took a hit in terms of the quality of black college athletes with integration. And to think, you know, George Wallace sat in the door of the registrar's office in 1963, trying to keep black folks from going to to Alabama. And then it just shows you how foolish those people were who had that in mind, because it kept those universities from not only getting talented athletes, but talented students and academians as well. And despite their evilness in trying to keep people away, when black folks finally got their rights to be able to go, it has added much to those universities in the South and throughout the country.
Well, not only did has integration cost black schools athletically, but it's just the black community in general, you know, where are the black businesses?
Yeah.
You know, they're non-existent now. You know, I know in my hometown, Union Springs, Alabama, there used to be, you know, several black businesses that, but they just aren't there anymore. And I'm sure it's that way across the country. You know, when the opportunity came to eat at the other restaurants, you know, we jumped on it because for whatever reason, we still, in a lot of ways, think that the other man's ice is colder and that his water is wetter and the like. And you and I both know that's not the case. So it's just, it's a sad commentary to see how things are shaking out. You know, we lost a lot. We made some gains, but we lost a lot. And I think it was just, just culturally, I think we lost out. I think we don't have the same sense of pride and dignity that we did in those days. We certainly don't have the sense of community in the unity that we had back then, because, you know, especially the younger generation, they feel like, you know, well, we've we got it made. You know, this, and the way things are now, you know, they think that's the way it has always been. And little do they know, little do they understand, you know, the struggles that our people have gone through to get to where we are. And even given where we are, we're still behind.
Yeah. And you know, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, and I remember Jefferson Street in Nashville was the hub of the black community. You had the movie theater, the Old Rich Theater, all the restaurants, all the shops. In fact, Tennessee State's legendary quarterback, Jefferson Street, Joe Gilliam, got that name from that avenue, from Jefferson Avenue, which everything you wanted in the black community in Nashville, from getting your hair cut to going out to the club at night, occurred on Jefferson Avenue. That's the name Jefferson Street, Joe Gilliam.
Yep. Those were different times, my friend. Those were different times.
Yeah. But getting back to the game itself, I also thought that Saban did not have a good night. And I just wonder, you know, they've definitely been in a few tight games, but more often than not, they're just blowing people out of the gym. And to see them behind like that, it seems like Saban didn't handle that well himself. And you talked about some of the decisions going for the fake field goal and some of the play calling. How do you rate his performance that night?
Very, very, very poor. Very poor. You know, for the exact reasons that you mentioned, that, you know, the running game was going extremely well. Damian Harris and Najee Harris and Josh Jacobs, each one of those guys, averaged more than 4 yards a carry. And you know, Alabama ran the ball. I mean, they ran the ball 37 times for, I believe, of like 135, 37 yards. So they were moving the ball on the ground. And that's where it makes Tua more effective with the play action, or the RPO, as they call it now, where he has better lanes and more opportunities to get the ball downfield because, you know, because of his height, you know, he's less effective as a drop back passer because the big bodies and he can't see over them and all. But if you, you know, do the play action, that creates some lanes for him. And I think if they had stuck with that, it would have helped, you know, all around. And speaking of Tua, you know, it's interesting that he has his, while he threw for 295 yards, he did not have a good game.
Right.
And we saw the game that he had against Georgia. It's interesting that in his two biggest games, he had his two worst games.
Wow.
It's interesting. And it would be interesting to see how he bounces back from that.
I mean, he's got a lot to prove coming back.
Right. 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 You know, we'll see what he's made of.
Now, on the other end, you know, it's been quite a climb for Dabo Sweeney. And what are your thoughts on his ascension to the top of college basketball?
Well,
I'm sorry.
Dabo has really, you know, really come from nowhere. Walk-on wide receiver at Alabama who didn't want to go into coaching. Gene Stallings kind of, you know, strong-armed him into going into coaching, and look where he is now. You know, and he just—I don't know—just something about his approach to the game and how he gets those guys up and get them ready to play, and maybe in their belief in themselves and maybe it has to do with, you know, his background as a walk-on, that that they're going to fight, you know, for everything that they get. It's not like they feel like they're entitled to anything, that they're going to go out and take it. And, you know, that's what they did. But he really has created a monster there. I mean, so much depth in that's really amazing that he's been able to do that. They've just gotten to the point where they just reload and keep it going. You look at the youth on that team. So all things being equal, they'll be around for a while. And
I would not be surprised. We see these same two teams in the national championship game next year. You know, I think a lot of people are thinking, well, the Wicked Witch is dead, the way that Alabama lost. But I think they will come back with a lot of resolve to try to make up for what happened the other night.
Certainly. I think Alabama certainly is in a stronger conference top to bottom in the SEC than Clemson is in the ACC. I think Clemson would have an easier path, you look at the SEC, just the Western Division where Alabama plays. You know, you have LSU, Auburn, Mississippi State, Texas A&M. Ole Miss, you know, is in and out. So, not to mention the crossover games, you know, Georgia, Florida, and Kentucky is on the rise. So, you know, Alabama will be challenged, and I don't foresee an undefeated season for them. But the SEC championship is right there. Within their grasp, even now. They ain't dead yet. Don't bury them.
That's what I'm saying, man. The Wicked Witch has another life, and it'll be interesting to see how they come back. And they're going to recruit hard and recruit well. And it was funny, man. The kid that really hurt him, the wide receiver, his name escapes me now.
Justin Ross from Phoenix City.
Yeah, and Dabo came in there and got him, man. I mean, this guy looked like a young Calvin Johnson the other night, making catches. Just get it in the neighborhood, and this guy's going to bring it in.
Yeah, you know, Central High in Phoenix City, I mean, that has long been a stronghold for Alabama, going back to Woodrow Lowe, his brother Eddie Lowe, Billy Jackson, Jeremiah Castile, all those guys, you know, played at Alabama and played well. But, and people were saying that's an indication that Saban is slipping, but I don't look at it that way. I mean, he can't get all of the good players, and it would be different. You know, you would say that if he had overlooked him and not recruited him at all, but it came down to Alabama and Clemson. And Alabama was victimized by his success, from what I understand, that he looked at the turnover at Alabama, the coaching turnover among the assistants, and that gave him pause, because they've had 3 offensive coordinators in the last 3 years. And
they're going to lose another one.
They lost Locksley, guys moving up because they have been successful. Kirby Smart, the defensive coordinator, moved on. So, and it just goes back. You know, McElwain had been there. So, you know, you just go back to and look at Saban's tenure there and the assistant coaches who have moved on to head coaching jobs. And that's really the strength of any really good team is, you know, you look at the assistant coaches, you know, they have good assistants and they're together for a long time. You know, I look at Eddie Robinson's staff and how long those guys were together at Grambling. And, you know, you look at W.C. Gordon's staff at Jackson State. It was very, very little turnover. Kasem at Alcorn. That's the key because, you know, the head coach, you know, he can't do it all. And it's
right.
Even more so these days the way the game has changed and become so specialized that you need, you know, good position coaches, good coordinators, and the like. But I'm sure Saban will he'll pull a rabbit out of the hat again and come up with something that's good.
Mm-hmm. You know that, brother. Well, man, we're going to go to our guest line and bring in a gentleman who's had a remarkable career in the National Basketball Association. 19 years. I mean, you would think this cat was a big seven-footer or something hanging around that long, but when you can shoot the rock like Jason Terry, it allows you to play that game a long time. So it's an honor and pleasure to bring on our good friend Jason Terry here on Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sco. Hey, Jason, along with Ricky Hampton and Roscoe Nance. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, fellas. Just the background noise. I'm in the gym as watching some of my former players. SM University of Houston women's basketball. So if it gets too loud, please let me know. But it's a pleasure for me to join tonight.
Okay. Okay, JT, glad to have you on.
Yes, sir.
It's been a while. I can recall when you came into the league as a rookie out of Arizona, and now here we are. So my question to you is, how did you achieve such longevity?
My faith in God, family, and hard work. I mean, for me, it was every day. I had a set routine, and I stuck with that routine for 19 years. And I think that's what kept me focused. That's what kept me motivated and determined to go out there and compete to the fullest of my ability every time I stepped on the floor. It was a blessing that I didn't have any major injury. And again, I had a strong support system at home. I got a beautiful wife, 5 daughters, and that allowed me to go out every single night and perform at a high level.
Well, when you came in, there was some question as to whether you were a point guard, whether you were a shooting guard. How did you navigate that?
Well, obviously, along this journey that we call life, you come in contact with many people that have aided and assisted you along your journey. And some of those men were, you know, guys like Avery Johnson, who was a coach for me in Dallas, who taught me how to be a pro, who taught me how to play the point guard position. There was also guys like Isaiah Thomas, who at the time was coaching the Indiana Pacers. He took me under his wing. He allowed me to, you know, call him periodically throughout the season and figure out, you know, how to play this game. And one thing, words of wisdom that resonate with me today that is stuck in with me is that you can play point guard or shooting guard. Those are just labels. But what you are is a dang good basketball player. And if you can, you know, fix your mind on that instead of what position you are, then you will be around this league for a long time. And so with those words, I took it to heart, and I live by those words. You know, even to this day, as I give back to the and I teach my basketball players, that I coach in the inner city. I try to tell them every day, be a basketball player, because then you are a value to whatever team you come in contact with. None of us are blessed with Kevin Durant's height at 7 feet and the ball handling skills that he possessed. Or, you know, 7 foot like Kevin Garnett with those ball handling skills. You know, some of us are 6 feet. But just because you're 6 feet, don't allow them to pigeonhole and just say you're a point guard or a shooting guard. Because I did defy odds at 6 feet to play for 19 years. And that's because my mindset was being the best basketball player I could be.
Hey, Jason, you talked about that. And you're right, man. 19 years as a guard, that's just phenomenal. And you talk about your routine. Could you talk to us about the work that you put in before we ever saw you take the floor and how consistent you had to be with that?
Well, early on in my career, throughout my career, I was a gym rat. So I would be before practice, 2 hours before practice, getting some work in. And then after practice, I would stay an additional hours and put the work in. But it was all routine. You know, it wouldn't be in there 2 or 3 hours just messing around, throwing up shots that I wouldn't take in the game. Everything I did was calculated. In those workouts, I would get to the spot that I was comfortable with on the floor and take and make numerous amounts of shots over and over and over and over. Sometimes up into the 500-600 range of shots every session. Then I would go through the playbook. Where would I get my shots within whatever offense I was in? And so once I did that, it didn't matter what defense was out there. It didn't matter what coverage defense played against me, because I had knew if I had a clear shot and look at the basket, then I would be able to take and make shots. And that confidence came from repetition. And so that was repetition, again, was routine, and it was something that I did every single day, not only during the season, but in the offseason as well.
You're listening to, let me just get everybody caught up. You're listening to Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Scott, legendary sports writer Roscoe Nance, and Ricky Hampton here. Jason, your listening achievement is just off the chart. You're currently second among players and eighth all time. We're playing 1,400 games, 1,450 to be that. Sixth man of the year, 2008-2009. After you averaged 19 points, 3 assists, and 2 rebounds for the Mavericks. And you won an NBA title in 2011. One of just 13 players with at least 18,000 assists and 1,500 steals. I mean, I can go on and on. I'm going to keep you here all night. That's a fantastic body of work. Have you had time to sit back and think about what you were able to do throughout your career?
No, not at all. But I will tell you, the last 3 years of my career, I spent a lot of time as a veteran in the locker room, mentoring the young kids. And, you know, they would mention the stat. And the stat that's relevant now that a lot of people look at and they put it up there is the third all-time in three-pointers made. And as I look back on my career, I was never just a three-point shooter. I was a deadly scorer. I would attack you in transition. If the three was there, I would take it. But as my years got later on in my career, I was more of a spot-up shooter, and those threes just started to amount. And now every time they mention Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and these great shooters that we have today, my name always pops up. So, you know, people are like, well, he's going to be mad when he passes. I said, no, because once he passes, my name will still be up there, and it'll always keep me relevant. So, you know, it's just an honor. I was blessed to play a game that I love, something that I had set out to do when I was in sixth grade. I said I wanted to be a professional basketball player, and I never wavered on my goal. And that's what I tell a lot of my young players. Set a goal and never waver. Stay steadfast at your goal that you set out. Keep your faith in God and work hard towards your goal every single day. Do something positive towards that goal. And I for me, that's what I think gave me that longevity.
Well, Jason, tell us about your trademark headband, how that came about.
Uh-oh. Well, in third grade, I walked into PE class, and lo and behold, my PE teacher was the one and only Slick Watt. Slick Watt played for the Seattle Supersonics and won a championship there. And so you can only imagine a third grader living in Seattle, growing up in the inner city, and your idol is your gym teacher. I mean, it was phenomenal. And we played basketball every day. And so it's a tribute to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that was a different time where guys had off-season jobs too.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Well, the decision to retire, how difficult was that?
Well, it was a decision that was not solely my own. Obviously, God has a plan for all of us. And for me, I wanted to play 20 seasons. There's no guard that ever played in the NBA 20 seasons at the size of 6 feet. And so that is a goal I set out for myself. Unfortunately, this year, no team picked me up. So as I stand here today, I am retired, but I am still a free agent. And if that opportunity presents itself, I will take it. But I've really slowly put a lot of focus in on my post-playing career, and that involves broadcasting. I've just signed a deal with Turner Sports to broadcast on their players-only segment with NBA TV.
Oh, wow.
And I'm also in training to become a head Division I basketball coach. So this is something that I've set out to do. You know, as my career got into my 12th, 13th season, I always thought about post-playing. What am I going to do when I retire? And for me, I've coached grassroots girls basketball in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We have 100% graduation rate. All our girls attend college on academic or athletic scholarships. And so, you know, I've prided myself in giving back to the community, teaching the next generation, and breeding and growing our next generations of leaders and homemakers.
Well, you sound like you're very busy. I mean, are you too busy to miss playing?
You know what? You always miss it because you're always around the game, and you miss the camaraderie, right? You miss the competitiveness, waking up in the morning, going to shoot around, getting on those long, late plane flights, getting in the city late, but then waking up that next morning and going out into the other team's arena and putting on a show. You miss that part of the game. But what I will tell you is, yes, staying busy, staying active, staying around the game. Hey, I'm a basketball lifer, so I'll be in some way, shape, or form a part of this game until they bury me 6 feet.
Jason, you see so many guys, man, that come into the league that just have all type of athletic ability and talent, and sometimes it doesn't work out for them. What? Mm-hmm. I mean, just in general, what does it take outside of being talented to be a NBA player, successful NBA player?
Well, I think a couple things. One thing for me is I had to tap into what I do great, right? A lot of guys come into this league and they're athletic gifted, yes, no doubt about it. Mentally, sometimes they're challenged because your confidence wavers. But I think where you gain confidence is leaning on what you do great. What do you bring to the table that nobody else does that is a special skill set that if there was no scout report, no game plan, I can count on you to do that every single night. That's what gives you longevity in our league. And I think a lot of young kids that come into this league, they find it hard to find because they get with trainers in the offseason and they get in a program and they work on all parts of the game. That's good to do and to develop, but if you want to be have longevity in our league, you have to be a specialist. You know, find out what you do great and then do that every single day and do it consistently. And the second part of it is then finding a system or an organization that believes in that specialty. And you know, hopefully they can stick with you. You know, a lot of guys are journeyman, they bounce around from team to team. And when that happens, your confidence can waver. And sometimes it makes you second guess yourself. It makes you second guess your dream. Is this for you? I find the guys that have longevity, again, in our league, they have that confidence that, hey, I do this great, and I'm going to be a valuable asset to whatever team I'm a part of.
Hey, Jason, you know what, man? I covered the Pistons. I'm a sports writer here in Detroit. And I covered the Pistons when Chauncey came to town. And Chauncey had been with four or five teams. And he had been labeled really a bust. And he got here, and the Pistons showed that they wanted him, and he just came into his own. So he was always that player. He just found the spot.
It's funny you bring up Chauncey because I align himself with me. There's a kid now playing as a Dallas that plays for the New York Knicks. His name is Emmanuel Mudiay. I give him the Chauncey Billups comparison as well. And as you know, as you come into our league as a point guard or a shooting guard, it usually takes 4 to 5 years before you reach your full potential, before you get to a point where you can be a valuable asset to an organization. And I think Chauncey, he was a journeyman for his first year. But at some point, some way along the way, he found out in his mind mentally, like, look, this is what I do well, and I'm going to do this every time. Whether the coaches like it or not, this is what I'm going to do. Then he found the organization that believed in his skill set, and they gave him the confidence and the keys to the car to go out there and do that every single night. And he found that in the Detroit Pistons. And so if you ask Chauncey, I guarantee you he'll tell you the same story. And, you know, you see it with a lot of kids in our league, you know, that come in. It just takes time. And I equate it to somewhat like the quarterback in the NFL. You know, you get these high draft picks, these quarterbacks that come into the league, and they don't have success right away. But it takes time. You have to give these kids and these players time to develop. But, you know, some organizations, they just don't want to wait. And it's, what can you do for me now? And if you don't have that time to develop, those kids are usually out of the league within 2 years.
You know, and Jason, it's interesting that you say that. And it's kind of opposed to itself because athletes are younger coming into the league, yet they don't want to allow them the time to develop.
Right.
In a lot of ways, the league has become more of a developmental league, but teams are impatient and they want you to produce right away. And if you don't, then you begin to bounce around, which can shake a young player's confidence. Now, I just find that interesting.
Yeah, because again, think about this, and at the end of the day, what people fail to realize sometimes, and they put us on a pedestal as athletes, but if you are not an athlete and you work a regular job and you move around your job 5 to 6 different states in 4 to 5 years, you know, 4 or 5 different companies, then how can you perform at your highest of your full ability? You can't. It's almost impossible. And so that's why I like to say, I mean, you got to give these kids either the structure or the infrastructure and all the tools they need to develop that skill set. And I put the onus on some of these organizations. Yeah, they have the development, you know, the player development title, but are we really taking the time out to develop these kids that we bring into this league? And I think for some part of us, you know, as the NBA, we have failed a lot of our talent by not giving them the proper infrastructure to develop. Now, there are some teams, if you look at Philadelphia 76, and they've had great success with their player development. You look at Joel Embiid, who took 3 years to develop before he, you know, they put him out there on the court and asked him to perform. I thought that was a great job in that particular instance.
So why is it more teams don't do that? Why don't more teams do that?
Well, again, there's a lot of pressure outside the organization, whether from ownership or from the fan base, and that pressure is to succeed, right, to be champion. Well, I tell everybody, there's only one champion. Every single year, there's only going to be one. That's a guarantee. There will be one champion, and that's it. And so you have to put an emphasis on what is it? What is your mission? What is your measurement for success for your particular organization at that particular period of time that you have those players? And is it a 2 to 3 year window? Is it a 4 to 5 year window? Whatever that window is, that's how you measure your success. And for me, a lot of teams, I look at, if I wanted to follow the blueprint of success, I follow the San Antonio Spurs method of success. They build around 3 core players, right? And they develop their talent around them, fit to their specific system. That doesn't mean they go out and draft the most athletic, the guy that can dunk, or the guy that can shoot all the threes. Let me draft players that specifically fit my system, implement them in it, and let them grow and develop within the system. That would be a model of success for me.
Well, that's good stuff, Jason. Hey, you're listening to Express Yourself with T. Ramona Scope. This is Ricky Hampton in for Tim Turner, along with legendary sports writer Roscoe Nance. We're with Jason Terry, NBA veteran of 19 years. Hey, Jason, I got a Other young players in the league today. Who do you like? Who should we keep an eye out for?
How y'all doing? Say that one more time.
Yeah, we got a text message from one of our listeners wanting to know about Trey Young. How do you think he's doing? And some of the other young players in the league we should keep our eye on.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, the New York Knicks took a chance by bringing in a free agent by the name of Lonzo Tripp. I spent some time with this young man. He went to the University of Arizona. He's from my hometown, Seattle, Washington. And this kid just earned a two-year contract off of 2 months to play. Those are the type of kids that I like to give praise to because I know the hard work and dedication that he put in, right? And he wasn't drafted. He wasn't a first-round pick. He wasn't lottery. You know, those are the success stories that I like to talk about in the league. They're always the ones that you see on SportsCenter. Obviously, Joel and Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo. These guys are great stars, and their path is already set for them. But those are those underdogs. The underdogs are the ones, you know, that I like to put my eyes on and that I like to take under and mentor. So, you know, future stars, obviously I told you, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Whenever LeBron leaves, Kevin Durant, James Harden, all these guys are phenomenal talent. And they're talent that we haven't necessarily seen since we've been fans of this great game that we talk about. But that goes to tell you that our game is in a great place and it will continue to evolve. It will continue to grow. Damian Lillard is another one. Nikola Jokic, who is a 7-foot, he can do it all. I mean, you haven't seen a center quite like him that possesses the ability to facilitate, score, and play defense the way he can. So, I mean, our pool of talent that we have now, our game is in a great place.
And this caller's from Atlanta. So, Trey Young, your thoughts about him?
Oh, I love Trey Young. Trey Young is another good talent. If you watch Trey Young play, he has to just do a better job of his shot selection, but it'll come. You know, when you're on a losing team and you're trying to do everything in your power to win, you're going to take some bad shots that are not quite, you know, are kind of questionable at times. But what I love about him is his ability to pass the ball, to make the teammates better with the pass. He does a phenomenal job. His vision is uncanny, and it's beautiful basketball to watch.
Well, Jason, let me ask you.
I forgot to mention Luka Doncic. Let me rave about him one second. He's another kid that he has the ability to be a professional at the age of 13. That's something that you've never heard of. Can I imagine myself at 13 years old playing against grown men in the NBA? It would have never happened. So he's a phenomenal talent, fearless competitor, and he'll be a star. He's already a star now in my eyes, but he'll be one of the guys we're watching in the All-Star game for years to come.
Well, Jason, let me ask you about the Warriors. They've had some ups and downs and some turmoil there. Are they still the team to beat?
Golden State is definitely the team to beat. Boogie Cousins will be healthy here. They told me next week he'll lace them up, and you'll see a whole other facet to their game. Anytime you have three of the greatest scorers, shooters on one team at one time, you're going to be in the race. And so they're the odds-on favorite. Two-time MVP Steph Curry, MVP Kevin Durant, Finals MVP. I mean, that's just too much talent on one team to overcome in a seven-game series. Now, had this been college and this was one game and you're out, then I would tell you something different. But right now, with the way they're constructed, as long as they don't have any injuries, that's the team to beat.
Well, what about the dust-ups and the like that we've seen with Draymond, Durant, and some other non-playing issues? How will that affect them? Will they be able to play through that?
Yeah, they'll be able to overcome it because, as you know, in any journey that you go through in sports or in life, you're going to have obstacles and roadblocks and adversity. How you come through those adversities shows the sign of character that you have. And if you look at this team, they're all champions, and they all want to win. And that's the biggest thing. As long as the underlying theme is winning at the end of the day, any argument or anything we get into as players in the heat of battle can be overcome. The biggest scenario I can tell you for my playing day is when It was late in the season. The year we won the championship. I was real disturbed about one particular player that was just over dribbling the basketball. And I got into a point where it was almost a physical altercation. But we got it out. We talked about it. We talked, talked in front of the coaches. And at the end of the day, we both just wanted to win. And what I had to do was realize what that particular player did great and just worry about the great things he did and not harp on the one negative. And I think in our lives, as human beings, if we can focus more on the positive and not that just one negative thing, then we'll just be better as a whole.
Jason, that is great stuff, man. Hey, we're going to let you get out of here. I do want one more question before we do regarding young people in basketball. I understand you've been working with young people. And if somebody that wants to play this game, is AAU a good route for them? What are your thoughts on AAU basketball, the pros and cons of it, and what would be your advice for some of our younger listeners who want to play this game?
Obviously, I'm an advocate for AAU basketball. It's something that I've been doing for 15 years now in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It gives you a platform. It gives you a platform to showcase your talents at the highest level. You get to meet different people from different parts of the United States and now the world with the new junior NBA that they've created. You're going to be playing against players that you wouldn't ordinarily see. And you'll be able to not only meet them and gain a relationship, but you'll be able to take some stuff from their game and add it to yours. I think where we miss out at is not AAU. Where we're missing out at now is middle school basketball. You know, these coaches that have these kids for 6 or 7 months and then turn them over to the AAU coach after about 6 or 7 months and give them to us for about 3 months, and we have to go back and teach the basic fundamentals of the game, that's where we're lost. So the growth and development of the game is the same as the coach. And again, yes, it's a factor of AAU coaches, but it's also the coaches in the elementary, the middle school, and at the high school level. So that when they do get it in the summertime, we're not having to recreate the wheel and reteach all over the game. Now, I love to teach basic fundamentals, don't get me wrong, but if you only got it 2 days a week, it's real hard to break those bad habits.
Well, man, we certainly appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your schedule to join us, and certainly I hope you will come back and visit us. And I am so excited to hear about you joining Players Only. Clearly, you will have a lot to add to that show.
Man, I sure appreciate it. Skull, you got my number. You can come, man. Sorry it took so long. But thank you for doing it again.
Okay, JT, you the best. I appreciate it, man.
Good to see you.
Okay. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jason. Wow, Rocco, that was, he was really good. I certainly worked the weight, and, 19 years in the National Basketball Association, and I think we've also been joined by T. Ramon, the one and only Mr. Tim Turner is on the line now, too, I believe. Tim, are you there?
Oh, yes, sir, I am.
Man,
That was a great interview with Jason Perry.
Yeah, Jason, he's a classy guy and always has been from day one, from the time that I met him when he was a rookie. He gets it, you know, he understands the game and on the court and off the court, you know, the game of life. So, you know, he's gonna do well, you know, whatever he does. You know, if he sticks with broadcasting, if he's coaching, he'll do well. And I remember Donnie Walsh, when he was president of the Indiana Pacers, saying that any guy who played 10 or more years in the NBA, that was like having a PhD in basketball. So yeah. What does that say for Jason? You know, it's 19 years. You know, he's a double PhD. So, good guy. Good guy. You know, one of the really, truly good guys in the NBA.
You guys covered a lot of ground tonight with that, and you guys covered the championship game and what was going on with that, and man, Alabama, I think, like I said, Nick Saban was channeling his inner Kirby Smart on that fourth down fake field goal. It just brought back sweet memories from the Georgia Alabama game and SEC championship. So.
Before we get back to Saban, Tim, Roscoe, who do you think Jason was ready to knuckle up with? I was thinking Dad Williams. I'm trying to think back to that. Was it Dad Williams? Was he on that championship? No, Jason Kidd wasn't it? No, Kidd was gone. Kid was gone.
Not for the championship. Not for the championship.
Hey,
I was thinking it was Darren Williams, and it could have been Berea. And if it's Berea, him and JT about the same size, I don't think he would have gone up against somebody else. I'll take on JJ.
I don't know. In the heat of the moment, you know.
Roscoe, you know, get that off the Air Force, man. Next time you talk to
him and Delva Dover, I can take them both. I was trying to think. Was Darrell Armstrong a coach then, too? Or was he a player then?
No, he wasn't playing then.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was thinking it must have been one of those two cats. Wow. That he was.
We're going to assign Roscoe to get that little tidbit for us.
Okay. You focus on the positives. You don't focus on the over dribbling. That's the moral of that story. Focus on the positives.
We knew it wasn't Dirk.
Nah.
I tell you what, Dirk's gonna put it up. So if he gets, he's gonna give you a head pump. But I mean he likes Trae Young. I do too. And I know Tim, you see him a lot. What are your thoughts about it?
My thoughts are a lot of, I keep thinking, man, Luka Doncic is awesome. That's what I keep thinking every time I see Trae play. Because I think Luka is just so far beyond Trae right now. And what Jason is saying is correct. It's like those rookie quarterbacks who don't come in the league and set the league on fire. I think that's what's happening with Trae. Last night, the Hawks had a chance to win against Toronto. And they were down by a point. And what does Trae Young do? Because he's feeling like he's Trae Young, he goes to the hoop against Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard, defensive player, all NBA defensive player, several times over, strips him of the ball. Hawks end up losing by three. You know, just like stuff like that, you know.
Right.
Rookie mistakes. Right. It's a learning thing, but it's like, dude, you know, pass the ball out to somebody who's not going to rip you or whatever.
Tim.
Yeah.
I hate to rain on your parade, but enough of the Hawks, you know, losersville. Okay, I have a flash here from one of my sources.
Uh oh. We're listening.
And the culprit was, according to sources who texted on the condition of anonymity. Because they're not authorized to speak on the subject, but they are close to the
subject. Thanks for calling back, JT.
No, what? It was not JT. Good, nice try. But my source says he's pretty sure it was JJ.
There we go.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's easy to see because he does dribble a lot. So yeah, I'll give him that. Oh no, I wasn't trying to you know get on the Hawk bandwagon. He asked about Trae Young. I heard about Luka. Luka's gonna be good forever.
Anything Atlanta, you're there, okay?
Okay. Oh yeah, but he's the one that said it. But Luka's gonna be great for a long time, and it's good that he talks about kids that he's an underdog because he seemed like an underdog on every team he played, even being the third lead guy with the most 3-pointers in the league. I wasn't aware of that. It seems like he did it pretty much invisibly.
Yeah. Well, can we switch gears a little bit
Can we switch to like 900 coaches being hired today? Because I understand the Jets have hired.
Well, no, let's switch to the HBCU circuit.
Well, look, guys, okay. I'm gonna step out and go behind the board and let you guys bring it home. And if you need extra time, just let me know.
All right.
Joe Taylor going into the Hall of Fame, National Football Foundation Hall of Fame.
Yes, sir.
That's big. That's big. And he's well deserving. He's well deserving. He's a class act and a good coach. And I'm happy for him.
And NC State got some good news too.
Yeah. I was kind of fearful that that wouldn't happen, but the longer that it went, it seemed that that was what it would be, that they would bring Buddy Pough back for another year. They need to give him some relief with his scheduling, because, he starts the season off basically with three losses guaranteed.
Right.
They finished
hot last year, so yeah. and they earned it. They earned it, and then to piggyback on NC State, the linebacker Leonard, who was at the Colts, set I think the team rookie tackle record or the team tackle record,
yeah,
or rookie,
yeah,
for the Colts. So hats off to him, and they're still playing.
Yeah. I think what they call him, what, Maniac or something like that. He's
yeah,
all over the place, tearing it up. He's a stud, but that just goes to show that from these guys from the HBCUs, they dominate their conference. They're going to do well in the NFL. Tariq Cohen, same thing.
Right. He's headed for the Pro Bowl, and of course, he'd rather be playing this week rather than thinking about being in Orlando in a couple of weeks. That was a tough loss for the Bears over the to the Eagles.
And
don't do it.
Well, I'm not going to say I don't trust field goal kickers. I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
But you know who I don't trust. You know who I don't trust.
John Gruden?
I don't trust field goal kickers.
Okay, there you go. All right, well.
You forced me to say it. You forced me to say it.
Hey, that he made the first one. And the second one was tipped. It was not missed, as the league shows.
Did you see that?
I did not see that at all.
Okay.
It looked like a straight up mistake when I saw it in real time.
And it was. And I think that the league is just trying to soothe
take the heat off of them.
Yeah. They don't want to.
It's like
they
Bartlett.
They don't want the word to go forth that an NFL kicker missed six field goals by hitting the upright in one season, four in one game.
They don't want to have a Steve Bartlett situation.
Yeah, but that was a tough loss.
They don't want that. But, man, I was one more thing before we go. We got less than a minute or so, but your Crimson Tide there. I was all for Alabama all in, but man, that Clemson, that was as thorough a whipping as I've ever seen Alabama take. It was officially over the third quarter, Roscoe. Come on.
If you look at it, Alabama was a lot of its own worst enemy. If you look at it, the failure to execute.
And that's what Saban said. It's like, we got to make plays, and then the kid falls down and blows up his knee or whatever the deal is. And
exactly.
The guy goes in for a long score.
Yeah.
And then you think about, I also give a shout out to the Central of Phoenix City. They had players on both squads in that game.
Yeah, who that messing with them devil boys?
That has been a pipeline, but the devil to come down to Phoenix City and get somebody that probably Saban would have wanted.
Saban did want him, but it came down to Alabama and Clemson, as Ricky and I talked about earlier, but he was uncomfortable with the coaching turnover at Alabama, so Alabama's kind of victimized by its success with coaches you know, leaving to take
other positions. Head coaches,
he hurt him, but you know, it's not like Alabama's receiving corps is diminished, you know.
No, it was well stocked. I thought he didn't want the competition. Yeah. Is the reason why he went to Clemson, because they keep reloading the receivers.
Yeah,
they keep receivers, as does Clemson.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, I came in on the end of you guys. You guys held it down pretty good there. Excellent show. I thought that Jason he dropped a lot of wisdom in between squeaks and whistles and buzzers there. But so we just look forward to you guys being with us next week. When give you guys a chance to do what now, Roscoe?
Express yourself.
See you next time.